right, welcome in to Are You Serious? Episode 44. Happy Thursday to you for those listening and watching live. I'm excited about this episode.
This is kind of a cool episode.
Throwing it back.
Throwing it back and also very timely.
Yeah, actually,
very
I didn't
timely.
Think about that.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that at all.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're wondering, we're talking about the Carolina tornado outbreak of March 28th, 1984. This was kind of your idea. We were going to do severe weather before, but I think next episode we're going to kind of dive into severe weather. I've gotten a couple questions from people. Hey, where can I start? How can I become better?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll kind of give some tips and tricks for that. That will be next week. But before we dive into the case study, if you will, we had a very good viewing and listening last week.
We did.
Very
and that was,
good.
Yeah. Yeah. You can definitely sort of feel an interest in the eclipse.
Yeah, for sure.
Starting to creep up. I know I'm just
counting
so
down.
Excited. I can't stand it.
Yeah. It's one of those things, too, that like everyone is kind of geeking out about it.
Yeah.
They want to know why it happens. I know Rose asked a question about eclipses. That's in the Shooting the Breeze box. Maybe we'll draw it this episode. Maybe it'll be later. But, man, it's going to be awesome to see from Texas all the way up to the Northeast. You're going to be there.
Yeah.
We're going to actually probably recap that experience.
Oh, of course. Of course.
I think when you come back from Texas, we'll talk hurricanes, and we'll also talk solar eclipse part two for you.
Yeah. Yeah. 9 days in Texas.
Yeah.
And we'll be a Texas boy by the time that's done.
So I'm going to come back
excited.
With a cowboy hat,
yeah, so
a straw in your mouth.
You'll
be set to go.
Some boots and be ready to roll.
It's been, I don't know, kind of a weird week. I feel like I've been swarmed this week.
Yeah. Man.
You've been busy too. We had the CCMF golf event on Monday. Great turnout. Once again, if you missed it, we're the media partner now for CCMF, Carolina Country Music Fest. So got to go out there, play golf, meet a lot of the clients and the people with it, and they're excited. They say it's going to be a record year, whatever that means.
Whatever that means. We know that it means a lot of people.
And a couple of people already asked me, like, how's the weather? And I gave them the typical answer.
Afternoon
thunderstorm.
Yeah, but you know, we've gotten really lucky.
We have.
With CCMF. I think last year was the only year that had any sort of, I don't even want to say significant, any kind of a weather issue. I think it was the final night.
Yeah, it was.
A quick little storm moved through, and they had to kind of shut things down a little bit for lightning. But it wasn't really that big of a deal.
Yeah.
You know, that was the first time.
First time, and really it's just been the heat.
Yeah, yeah.
How can you prepare for the heat?
Yeah.
And, of course, we'll talk Carolina Country Music Fest. Maybe we'll even be able to, I don't know, do a podcast kind of remote.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Cool.
That would be fun.
That
would that in
cool,
the background? I don't know if that's possible.
We could do that.
So that was happening. Wednesday, we had the Horry County Schools Technology Fair.
Yep.
You've done that in the past.
I've done it in the past.
Those kids.
Smart kids. Smart.
I think back to what I was doing in middle and high school.
Like basically picking my nose and eating dirt.
They build like apps and like it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's really
robots.
Cool.
Oh, they're building robots that do stuff crazy.
It's also just crazy to think that those kids are like well further off, and Horry County schools have done a great job there. And then Thursday I had a school talk with my middle school. I do this. I think this is my 10th year in a row of doing this for their career day.
Oh, that's so good.
And I only like with this shift, I can only do like 2 hours, so I did it in the morning, and it's really cool to see like the interest in TV.
Yeah,
and then you realize like a lot of them just want to be in TV to be on TV.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, well, you might want to rethink.
Yeah,
think that out
a little bit. That's
But it's always a fun time too. How's Jamie been?
Jamie's good. Jamie's good. Had a good weekend.
Do anything fun for the weekend?
Nothing too crazy. This past Saturday was an interesting day weather wise.
Yeah.
We kind of said it was going to rain. It'd be gross all day.
I was going to bring it up.
And it wasn't.
Yeah.
But that's what I call getting the forecast wrong the right way.
Yeah. No,
when,
seriously.
You know, we forecast clouds and rain, and we got the rain that morning.
Yeah.
And then the sun came out, and it was a spectacular Saturday. And
it was really good for the afternoon.
Oddly enough, didn't get any nasty emails or phone calls about it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, too. Like, it's so tough, and even kind of the system that we've had this week, when you know the rain's going to be heavy enough overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But not enough people are going to really realize that it rained that heavy overnight. It's like the perception of how you forecast.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone's going to get rain, but When's it going to end? And that's the tough part with this. So I thought about that Saturday. I enjoyed Saturday afternoon.
I did too.
It was Sunday.
Beautiful.
A little breezy, but not bad.
Yeah. And as we expected, it feels like we've also sort of broken the back of pollen season.
Yeah, it's kinda, I think so.
Got a good wash.
Yeah.
Still some left, but certainly nothing like it was. So worst is behind us.
I think the worst is behind us, and now we turn our attention to warming up and severe weather.
Severe weather? At least as of right now, none in the forecast.
No.
Nothing down the pike.
Mm-mm.
But a time of the year where things can really get crazy.
Yeah.
So here we go. Let's talk about crazy. Let's talk about crazy.
Just looking at the setup of this, even in the upper levels of the atmosphere, classic.
Yeah.
Set up. And we'll talk about this next week about what you need, but they had everything. We talk about rising air, obviously warm, moist air as well.
Yeah.
Typically when you're forecasting this stuff, if your dew points can be in the low 60s in March,
mm-hmm.
you're good. I think Wilmington hit a dew point of 72.
Mm-hmm.
Leading up to this event, that's ripe for severe weather, and the rest just kind of takes place. So,
what we're talking about is sort of the benchmark for tornado outbreaks for the Carolinas, March 28th, 1984. Mm. Basically, the worst tornado outbreak in the Carolinas, in the history of both Carolinas, as of 2011, it kind of got tied. I figured we'd kind of touch on 2011 after this. But yeah, March 28th, 1984, tornado outbreak. Not only a big number of tornadoes, but the thing that stands out about that outbreak was the intensity of the tornadoes. A lot of EF4 tornadoes, which are exceedingly rare in the Carolinas.
Yeah, you go far enough east and you're not going to get EF4.
Yeah, yeah. There's never been an EF5 anywhere in the Carolinas.
Yeah.
EF4 is as strong as we've gotten. Hopefully we can keep it that way. But the 1984 outbreak featured a lot of EF4s. And as far as our area goes, features one of them, and we'll get to that in a second, that is mind-blowing. Actually, two EF4s.
Mm-hmm.
That is just some mind-boggling stats.
Even just the scope of this, so the Storm Prediction Center wasn't around yet.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually the Severe Local Storms Unit, per se. Yeah. But reading some of the discussions or even how they were wording this mm-hmm. days in advance, you got to think of the 80s is impressive.
Yeah, this is the 80s, yeah.
So this is a lot less technology, but it had the look and the wording and everything. I think they ended up saying this was a high-risk severe mm-hmm. weather event leading up to it, especially in the morning.
Yeah, high-risk. Their risk categories have changed a little bit since 1984, but basically in today's terminology, we were basically all of the Carolinas that day were under a level 5 risk.
Yeah.
High-risk, which you've heard us talk about, level 1 to level 5. We were under the highest, which was level 5.
Warm front moved through, kind of ripened the atmosphere. And we talk about what you need for severe weather quite mm-hmm. a bit. They had everything. Low pressure was off to the northwest.
Yep.
And basically, if you have a low to the northwest and everything is ripe, you basically have everything maxed up. And also, what's important about this is with that upper level low,
mm-hmm.
we always think of this as like an interstate.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we tell people.
Mm-hmm.
So coming around the base of that low, everything's converging.
Mm-hmm.
So you have sinking air on the backside of that low. Well, it's complete opposite, especially if you have some fast-moving winds or what we like to call a jet streak. Low pressure off to the northwest, and you just have rapid moving air.
Yeah.
To where even in the morning, things are just rising and getting ready.
You're almost creating a vacuum.
Literally.
Where everything in the atmosphere is going up.
Yeah.
As everything is going up, it's encountering wind shear. So it is, as it's going up, it is starting to rotate.
Mm.
And there were a handful of rotating thunderstorms that day that produced an impressive amount of tornadoes by the numbers. 11 tornadoes in North Carolina. 11 tornadoes in South Carolina.
Mm.
That doesn't sound like a lot, but again, it was the intensity of the tornadoes with this outbreak that is what really made it stand out.
Also, too, when you look at, and I would encourage you to go to the National Weather Service site. They have a great write-up of this, but if you were to look at the tornado map,
mm-hmm.
what's so interesting to me is you could see there was a couple particular cells.
Mm-hmm.
that produced tornadoes along a path.
Which is not really unusual in big outbreaks.
Correct.
When you have big tornadoes. We're kind of jumping ahead, but it's just too cool to not talk about. With the 1984 tornado outbreak, there was one storm that started basically north of Columbia, dropped a couple of tornadoes. That one moved locally into Marlboro County, into Robeson County, crossed up the border into North Carolina, and basically continued all the way up through Greenville, North Carolina, finally dissipated up near Elizabeth City, North Carolina. That single storm produced most of the tornadoes that day and was producing tornadoes over a 250-mile-long path. That's insanity for around here.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next thing here.
Okay.
And go to the numbers here because I don't remember them.
Oh, okay.
Okay. There, yeah, no,
you don't want any of this?
Oh, yeah. Sure, we can do that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, these are just the some of the old newspaper clips and the damage caused by that. This is Bennettsville, which was just hit insanely hard from that 84 tornado. And again, more of the pictures.
Costs of disaster will be incredible is what that headline says.
Yeah. And a lot of fatalities and a lot, just an insane amount of injuries. So South Carolina, 11 tornadoes, 15 fatalities. The number of injuries is what blows me away.
Yeah.
Just in South Carolina, 450 people hurt from that outbreak. North Carolina also had 11 tornadoes, 42 fatalities, and 800 injuries.
When you total that up, it's 1,248 injuries.
Mind-boggling.
So, which puts in a good perspective here, because a lot of people say, you know, tornadoes are so small that when they happen, they blow by. This is why you prepare for a severe weather event right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
22 tornadoes, 22
violent tornadoes.
And these are the numbers you get. It's really crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Imagine what it would be like to have an event like this now today with all the technology that we have.
I've often thought about all the photos and videos
that would come in.
Yeah, it would be... you know, in today's terms, this would be leading the national news for a couple of days.
Yeah,
the 100%. Aftermath of it. It was that big of an event. It was leading the national news then. But it was that big of an event. Let's go to the map here because I want to talk about sort of the local impacts. Again, it was mainly the Eastern Carolinas. But let's take you up to Bennettsville up here in Marlboro County. This is insane. The first tornado in Marlboro County touched down at 6:40 that evening on the March 28th. That was an EF4. It worked through the north side of Bennettsville. The old Bennettsville Mall was destroyed. There was a lot of apartment complexes destroyed. In fact, I don't remember the exact location. Somewhere in Bennettsville, there is a steel I-beam that is still driven into the ground and twisted. And it's sort of a little makeshift memorial to the 1984 outbreak. That's the little short line you see there. That was the first one. An hour later, here comes the main storm, the main supercell thunderstorm. That one touched down an hour later at around 7:40, also hit Bennettsville, crossed the path of the first tornado, and then worked its way through Scotland County and into Robeson County, North Carolina. The most impressive stat out of that one, how big it was.
Yep.
One, it was an EF4. Two, it was 2.5 miles wide. That's
a stovepipe.
That's up there with the biggest tornadoes that have ever been recorded as far as size. You think about most tornadoes around here, especially 20 yards, 30 yards.
Yeah.
You get a big one, it's 100 yards, like the width of damage, 2.5 miles wide.
Yeah.
That's terrifying, especially of that intensity, an EF4. Winds approaching 200 miles per hour.
I was kind of looking at local roads just to get a perspective to kind of tell people what that would be like. And I was trying to use Carolina Forest Boulevard. It's too big. If you were to take Forest Brook Road, everyone's driven through Forest Brook.
Yeah.
Half of Forest Brook Road is the tornado.
Yeah.
It's a 5-mile road.
Yeah.
2.5. So half of that.
Right.
Moving through the year. That is incredible.
It is terrifying.
To think about.
Absolutely terrifying.
And I'm sure the stories of people, if they remember this, well, A, they will remember it, but B, just a horrifying night, no doubt about it. Also, what's crazy about this, when I was looking at it, the tornado watch, did you notice that? Was issued for nearly the entire state of South Carolina.
Yeah.
They were that confident.
Yeah.
The tornado watch was the largest tornado watch ever put down for the Carolinas that extended for southeastern Georgia all the way up into portions of Virginia. They just blocked out the coast and said, here's the watch.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
And it verified.
Yeah, 100%.
Because the second tornado here, the one that touched down north of Bennettsville and worked its way north, the storm that produced that tornado was the main storm of that tornado outbreak and continued to produce EF4 tornadoes. If you're familiar with eastern North Carolina, up through Goldsboro, Greenville, North Carolina was devastated. That's where sort of the highest number of fatalities came from. East Carolina University was hit. And that same storm continued all the way up and again until it exited the coast right around Elizabeth City, North Carolina, on the northern Outer Banks.
It looks like the damage from that Robeson County, Marlboro, Scotland, exceeded $500,000, the damage. And that tornado was on the ground for 35 miles.
Again, insane. You think about a normal tornado, it was on the ground for a quarter of a mile. You know, that's kind of our typical around here.
Yeah.
But yeah, on the ground for 35 miles.
Just
chewing up as it went.
That is nuts. It wasn't even that for our area. We also had another tornado that touched down. By the way, I love this map. It's so you. Horry County.
Yeah, had an Horry County tornado from that one. In the grand scheme of things, that one wasn't awful. But still, by our standards, this was a big tornado. It was an EF2, touched down just north of Conway. Crossed Highway 9 near Loris, and then eventually did a lot of damage in Tabor City. That one was also a big one, a quarter of a mile wide, certainly not 2.5, but a quarter mile wide tornado is a big tornado, and 8 injuries out of that one.
You want to know what's crazy is the damage was the same amount as the one up, and as far as cost, and it's because of the population.
Yeah, a lot more population,
But yeah, it's nuts to think about. Even that these days is tough. EF2.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, think about what we went through with, what was that, the December cane or whatever?
Yeah, a one.
A one?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, EF2s are impressive. They're all impressive, but it just goes to show kind of this outbreak. Another weird thing about the this outbreak, you were talking about the area of low pressure. It was so intense that it set a lot of record low pressure records for the month of March for certain cities. I mean, your pressure was down there with, you know, some of the stronger tropical storms and hurricanes we get. Just gives you an idea of how intense that system was.
I also want to talk about, too, when we were talking about the Marlboro County, Robeson County tornado, 7:40 p.m. That thing continued on to the northeast well into the night.
All through the night.
Imagine an EF4, at this point, an F4 tornado coming through at 10, 11 p.m.
Yeah. In the 80s, where, again, you didn't have the tracking technology. You know, obviously today with a situation like this, you know, we would be on the air continuously nonstop. They were still covering the tornado, you know, on local TV stations, but certainly not to the extent that it's done today. So a lot of people, you know, were sort of, didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
Didn't know what was coming.
10 p.m. is one of the last timestamps we get of that tornado moving through. That was the F4 that was moving through eastern North Carolina. That was also the area where they had all day to ripen up the atmosphere. That's where the 72-degree dew points were, and it moved into an area that was favorable. And typically what happens with these systems is, as that low really gets going to go into the overnight, you'll start to get the jet streak takeover.
Yeah.
The lower level jet. So eventually that would fizzle out and probably become a big time wind event. I didn't even look at the wind numbers, but I can already tell you that it had to be howling based off the look of it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else. There's a couple things I pointed out to this.
That event, as a lot of these big events do, changed a lot. The way the National Weather Service nationally handles tornado warnings.
Okay.
There were a lot of changes made to the sort of the wording that some of that wording is still used today by the National Weather Service about, you know, what to do. Back in the day, it was like tornado warning issued for Horry County, and it kind of ended there. Now that warning will say seek shelter immediately, find lowest level. You know, that is a function of the 1984 outbreak. One of the real cool things, Bennettsville decided to add tornado sirens.
Okay.
After the 1984 outbreak. They've since just kind of gone dormant because they just, I guess, realized that tornado sirens are kind of useless around here. Bennettsville decided to start installing tornado sirens, and they were up and going for a couple of years. It changed the way a lot of weather is handled in the U.S., all because of what happened right here in our own backyard.
I don't want to say it's the beauty, but that's one of the things where if you talk to anyone who is intrigued by weather, what got you into it? It's always an event.
Mm-hmm.
It's always something that you'll remember forever. Yeah. And that's where I think it's events like this that either get people into it or terrified. That's where we come into play a lot, especially when it comes to the job. So,
We sort of hit on it at the beginning. As far as the number of tornadoes, 1984 was eclipsed in April of 2011.
Yeah.
That's sort of the other benchmark tornado outbreak for the Carolinas, especially North Carolina. I was here working that event. 1984 was a high risk from the Storm Prediction Center, level 5. The next time we were under a level 5 here in this area was 2011.
Mm-hmm.
That shows you how rare they are around here. We had a lot of tornadoes locally with that outbreak. They were weaker, EF1s, EF2s. Eastern North Carolina, though, EF3s, EF4s, a lot of fatalities, a lot of injuries. I don't, right off the top of my head, I don't remember the numbers, but 2011 outbreak was a big one for the Carolinas and kind of rivaled 1984. Very similar setup. A lot of individual supercells dropping tornadoes their entire lifespan. Raleigh was hit. Greenville was hit again. North Carolina.
Those are the days, too, where, like, people in the business, they called it career day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the day you will remember for the rest of your life, for the rest of your career. And effectively communicating that. And that's where I continue to harp on this is where people need to have effective communication classes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, think about April 20, 2011. You come in, maybe it's your second year in the business. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all hands on deck.
Yeah.
Like, it's make or break.
Yeah.
Same thing with hurricanes, same thing with tornadoes. And that's why, you know, our jobs are so important and why we love to do what we do, because it's events like this that kind of keep us on edge.
Yeah. It was the 2011 tornado outbreak. I've told the story before that we were hosting some of our local weather spotters that day. It was a Saturday, and we were hosting local weather spotters for like a little lunch and welcome and get to know you and just kind of a little social thing. We probably had 30 or 40 people. This very spot used to be the weather center where we are right now. And just on the other side of this camera, there were 40 people. And that outbreak started early in the day, before even lunchtime. We started getting tornado warnings. And we were basically on the air for the rest of that day and had a live audience of all those people who came to just hang out and have lunch with us, ended up getting treated to.
I've never asked, but at what point do they leave?
They started leaving in the afternoon when things really started to crack. We couldn't say anything else to them. We didn't have time, but I think people started saying, okay, we're in go mode now. We need our space. So that was crazy.
And the technology even then has changed.
Yeah.
Dramatically. I guess one thing I wanted to bring up when it comes to this stuff, outside of the Carolinas, growing up, what were some notable tornado outbreaks for you that you remember?
Probably the one that strikes me more than anything was May 3rd, 1999, Oklahoma City, EF5. That's when sort of home video really started getting good and becoming widespread, and the video of that tornado was just insane.
Yeah,
That was an EF5 that tore basically through the southern suburbs of Oklahoma City. I remember that one very distinctly. I remember there was a tornado outbreak in 1998. A tornado hit downtown Nashville.
Yeah.
And the next day, that same storm system came through the Carolinas. And we had a lot of tornadoes, and I was out storm chasing as a college student that day. Yeah, those are two that stick out for me.
Super Tuesday is always a big one.
Super Tuesday, yeah.
Both more Oklahoma outbreaks.
Yeah.
And there's books written even on the Oklahoma City one of just perspectives of people going through it. For me, and I think I've said this before on the podcast, March 2nd, 2012, only because I should have bought a lottery ticket. I don't even think I could have bought a lottery ticket at that point. I was sitting in college. We went out to the Severe Weather Symposium in Oklahoma, in Norman, Oklahoma. And, you know, back in Kentucky and Indiana, they're in a high risk. So we booked the tour well in advance, months in advance for the Storm Prediction Center. And they were like, hey, we're going to, you know, acknowledge your tour. And we're all glued. So we're seeing them type this high risk.
Yeah.
Area forecast discussion, everything going out, putting everything in, and just to be able to say, hey, we're putting a high risk out for the day, and you see them go into that process.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here like, this is a dream.
Yeah.
And those people in the Storm Prediction Center are so good.
The absolute best of the best.
At what they do. Yeah. Just, and it's, you know what's crazy is it's so quiet in there.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So quiet in there. You would think it's like, oh, check this. You can hear a pin drop.
They are working. And they are working hard.
And they look like the keyboard cat meme where it's like, it's getting all the products out. For people that don't know, they do the outlooks. They also do all the watches. And then the warnings are, of course, transpired over to your local offices. Yeah. But yeah, great stuff, great people. Them and the National Hurricane Center are thankful for both of them.
The absolute best of the best, the most professional, dedicated people in this business, without a doubt.
I have a feeling next week we'll kind of dive into the Storm Prediction Center and where you can look.
The people who make me realize I know absolutely nothing.
And you know what? I'm okay with that sometimes.
Yeah. You know what? Leave it to the experts.
It's funny because when we have a hurricane or even something coming in, you know, you go through your models and your tips and tricks.
Yeah.
And then you'll go read the discussion or the outlook and you're like,
wow,
I didn't notice that. Let me go back and look.
Yeah. Or a lot of times I'll go in there and it's like, that's a new term. That's like something I've been in this business so long that they have like found something new that I've never even heard of before.
You click on it to see what the definition is.
What is that? Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
I guess we should shoot the breeze here.
Let's do it.
By the way, case studies. I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love to geek out over old historic events. If you want to know more, we'll post a link. We should post a link to this.
Okay, in the comments?
In the Facebook,
on
the YouTube thing.
Okay.
Because it's a really great write-up from the National Weather Service office in Wilmington.
They took a lot of time. There's also the links of like the soundings and all that, too.
Yeah, so if you like to really geek out over weather, if you really want to dive into the details, we will get that link up.
Also, I just realized I have a random cup of coffee. Like,
oh, well, we got a nice batch in here. Right. All right.
Yeah, we had quite a bit of people.
Bets on whether it's going to be Mark for the first question?
Actually, I don't think I threw Mark's question in there.
Oh, poor Mark.
Yeah, sorry, Mark. I have it. It will be in there. Don't worry. But
okay, well,
I saved some of these severe weather ones for this episode, too. Okay. So if they asked about it over the year.
Well, we're not talking about severe weather anymore.
Oh.
What are the different types of eclipses? How long do they usually last? This one is from Rose.
Man, I had this written down, too, last episode, and we never touched on it. Partial, total, annular, and annular, and I think there's one more, but it's like it's part of one of those. Let me see if I have it in this notepad.
So yeah, basically,
while you're looking,
partial eclipse, obviously, is just kind of what it sounds like. It's the where, for example, coming up on April 8th, our view will be of a partial eclipse.
Yep,
70% of the sun will be covered by the moon. If in a total eclipse, which is where I'm going to be in Texas, 100% is covered. An annular eclipse is a little bit different in that the science gets a little tricky, but the entire disk of the sun is not covered.
Correct.
But it's almost covered.
Correct. The moon still passes in between.
Moon still passes in between the Earth and the sun, blocks out the sun. But because of the distance at the time of an annular eclipse, it's not quite as impressive. Still really amazing to look at.
Yeah.
An annular eclipse, you'll have a much brighter ring of light that still shines around the moon as it's covering the sun.
There is a thing called a hybrid solar eclipse, which is extremely rare, but it's the combination of an annular and a total. But the total is a brief window, like seconds.
Ah.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not for a long time. Yeah. I knew I had that written down somewhere. Yeah.
And most eclipses is at least the most important part of seeing. How long do they usually last? A couple of minutes.
At one fixed location. Yeah, minutes.
Yeah, where I'm going to be for totality in Texas. It's about 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
Which is
long. Yeah. The longest part of totality here in the 2017 eclipse was down by the low country, and that was maybe 3 minutes. Mm. Those are the fastest couple minutes of your life, though, because it's so mind-blowing to see.
It's crazy, and this is what I love about it, is you're waiting months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for 4 minutes.
Four minutes. That's it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Rose, good question. I totally forgot that. I threw that in there. I didn't know this was in here. Can you go into a little bit more detail on the Storm Prediction Center and what they do?
Okay.
Tiffany, via Twitter.
All right. So, we kind of touched on this. So, Tiffany, is that Tiffany Brewer?
I don't know. I just put Tiffany via Twitter.
Carol.
Oh, I bet you it's Tiffany Carol.
Yeah, Tiffany. Yeah. I don't know where Brewer came from.
I think there is a Tiffany Brewer.
But. Yeah. Anyway, so the Storm Prediction Center, they are sort of a branch of the National Weather Service, all umbrellaed under NOAA.
Yeah.
So you have sort of NOAA, the overarching, the National Weather Service, Storm Prediction Center, National Hurricane Center, they all sort of fall under that. So the Storm Prediction Center, basically their job every single day is forecasting where severe weather is going to happen.
Mm.
And they do that on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You can go to their Storm Prediction Center website every day, and it will be, you will see today's severe weather outlook, tomorrow's severe weather outlook, mm-hmm. day three severe weather outlook, and starting, what, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah.
They started doing a day 4-8
yeah.
severe weather outlook. And they highlight areas of the country that may see severe weather, go through a full forecast discussion, which for you young and up-and-coming meteorologists, read those outlooks from the Storm Prediction Center.
Religiously.
Mm-hmm. Because they are amazing and just a huge pool of knowledge. They're also responsible for issuing, as you were saying, watches. So tornado watches, severe thunderstorm watches, those all come from the Storm Prediction Center.
Yeah.
They also issue a product called a mesoscale discussion, which are really helpful products. So if you're in a day where severe weather is expected, usually they'll put out a mesoscale discussion that says monitoring this area. Likely going to issue a watch in 2 hours.
They'll even put a percentage on it.
Yeah, 60% chance of a watch being issued. And in the middle of an event, especially if it's in a big event, they'll issue mesoscale discussions on individual storms. Okay, we're watching this tiny area.
Oh, those are my favorite.
For an increasing tornado potential, extremely large hail. And they're doing that numerous times a day.
I think you nailed it.
Okay.
In fact, their website, too, if you ever get a chance, right where you can get your outlooks, the meso-analysis page.
Meso-analysis. I have used the
I live and die by that thing.
And the thing I love about the meso-analysis page is that it is exactly the same as it was when I was in college. Mm-hmm. It's the same product.
They don't change it. I love it.
And it's my comfort zone.
And I would even argue this, and we'll get into this next week. There is a feature on that where when you're looking at something like, say, CAPE or, I don't know, storm relativity, if you don't know what that means, there's a little question mark next to each product.
Yeah.
And it basically, you can highlight over, and it will tell you what this is showing you.
Yeah.
And that is how you learn everything.
Yeah.
You don't need a class if you want to just go
there. Read those discussions, especially if we have a system coming our way. Read those discussions and outlooks from the Storm Prediction Center, because they are beautiful.
Tiffany getting me fired up here. I'm ready to jump in on it. All right, we'll do a couple more, too.
All right. Go down to the bottom here. We messed up. That was Mark's question about cloud layers from last week.
Oh,
how
we
to get back in the
there?
Box.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
When are we going to see Jenna do the weather? Paula, via YouTube. Jenna's over there working away.
I don't get paid to answer that, so. It's not my decision, boss.
We can't give away a whole lot, but we got Jenna working on some special projects. And you're going to see her sooner rather than later.
Cut that.
That's
as
all.
The tease for this week.
That's all. You're going to see
Who
Jenna.
Asked that?
That was Paula.
Paula trying to get the tease.
Yeah.
Oh, this is good, which I guess we talked about it today. Honestly, too, this might be a little trivia question for us. Why are older tornadoes referred to as an F1 or F2? But today, we call them an EF1 or EF2. Lily via Facebook.
So this is kind of fun.
So we should figure out the year or make a guess for the year on when this was done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think back to outbreaks.
So as we always have to do on this podcast, we got to back up a little bit.
Yeah.
The original F scale for tornadoes,
mm-hmm.
which is now the EF scale, the F stands for Fujita.
Yeah.
You're like, what?
The best.
Yeah, the F stands for Fujita, named after Dr. Theodore Fujita,
mm-hmm.
who was obsessed with the damage caused by hurricanes and tornadoes.
Mm-hmm.
He was a meteorologist, but he was fascinated by the damage caused by these systems. So his career path led him to developing the Fujita scale. And the Fujita scale basically says, okay, at this level of a tornado, this is the damage that you see. And this process was done by him literally walking the damage paths of tornadoes and surveying tornado paths. So an F0 tornado, you're going to expect this, broken tree limbs,
yeah.
some uprooted trees, shingles off, all the way up through F5. One of my favorite things ever in the world to look at. He made a hand-drawn map.
I've seen this.
A hand-drawn map of the damage produced in South Carolina from Hurricane Hugo. It's this beautifully detailed map of the wind direction, the wind speed, how it worked its way through the Carolinas. So he's absolutely brilliant. He has since passed away. As science got better,
mm-hmm.
and as building codes got better, there was a need to sort of upgrade the Fujita scale. So now we have the enhanced Fujita scale, EF.
And that enhanced Fujita scale came in the early 2000s. I still am going to try to guess, but I didn't type it in yet. And what was happening is as we got into the, I'm saying it's 2000s, the 2000 time frame, you would have surveyors go out
mm-hmm.
when we had the typical Fujita mm-hmm. scale, and they would go in and they would actually come back with a little bit slightly different
yeah.
Ratings
yeah.
for these tornadoes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of the building code. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you're going off a scale that doesn't have all the building deterministics to where, you know, is this built with wood? Is this
yeah.
built with brick? And you're just saying, hey, if a building is toppled,
mm-hmm.
check it.
Right.
So as we evolved, the scale had to evolve.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So now the wind speeds are a little bit more, and I think there's like 20 plus different values that when they even look at building damage
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
In this enhanced, and it gives us a better representation of how strong the winds are.
Yeah.
I'm still saying it was like 2004.
I'm thinking it was early 2000s, yeah.
I just don't
early
know.
Early 2000s,
all right,
but
let
yeah.
me look it in.
We should also put a link. I hope you're going to remember all this.
2007.
2000. Wow.
Seems late.
Yeah, it does seem late. Mm. We should put a link also, or at least the picture that he did of Hurricane Hugo
yeah,
in the YouTube chat, because that's really, mm-hmm. really an amazing thing to look at.
One of the best to ever do it, too, and it would have been cool to just know what fueled him, obviously.
Yeah.
I know it's tornadoes and hurricanes, but could
yeah.
you imagine sitting down and talking to him?
Right.
Because, like, in the weather world, everyone's kind of, like, approachable.
Yeah.
I would geek out.
Yeah.
Geek out.
Yeah, with Dr. Ted Fujita. Yeah.
Oh, I think we end it there. That's a good question.
That was really good. That was really good. I like that.
I would hate to hop into it, and it's something that's going to be well yeah. off the tornado. Also, rate, like, share.
Subscribe.
I always forget that. Subscribe. Dang it. Rate us, too, if you're on Spotify and Apple. Next week, we are talking Storm Prediction Center.
Severe weather.
The tips and tricks.
Yep.
I'm going to be honest. We will probably geek out a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe we talk about forecasting busts, too, when it comes to severe weather.
Mm-hmm. Which we've had our fair share of those.
We have.
We've had our fair share of those.
Right, I don't remember those dates, but I can tell you a couple storms for sure.
Yeah.
Both here and in Kentucky. You'll also be in Texas.
I will be in Texas.
But we will have a new episode for you.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to keep the momentum going. So, yeah.
Any questions, let us know. We'd love to answer them. But I think that's going to do it for us for this episode.
Episode 44.
Keep them short. We know y'all are busy.
Yeah. And this one was kind of heavy. So we'll see you back here for episode 45.